there, Green Future Growers. Thanks for joining us today. If you're new to the show, I hope you'll subscribe on iTunes or your favorite Android app, and let's get growing. Do you love to listen to audio as much as I do? Have you ever tried an audiobook? As a fan of this podcast, you must already enjoy listening to stories just like I do. Well, the Organic Gardener podcast has teamed up with Audible to offer you a free audiobook. Just go to www.organicgardenerpodcast.com/book or just type book into the search bar at theorganicgardenerpodcast.com and you can get enter to get listening to your first audiobook today. Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast. Today, I'm excited to introduce my guest, Kate Sparks. She comes to us from Pennsylvania and has a business called Lilies and Lavender. And hi, Kate.
Hello. Good afternoon.
Welcome to our show. And let's just jump right in. Well, go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself and your business.
Okay. Officially, I started in 2000, but I did have some flowers since 1998 and sold them at the local farmers market. But I consider 2000 my start date because that was the year I joined the Association for Specialty Cut Flower Growers. Until the last couple years, actually until last year, I grew mainly flowers to sell at farmers markets. And after a few years, I started doing weddings. And this coming year, 2015 season, I will no longer be selling at any farmers markets. So I'm completely changing the focus of my business, and which means that I will be changing the kinds of flowers I'm growing, because the two markets between farmers markets, weddings, and florists are totally different, and the need for flowers is different. So that's what I'm doing this year.
So tell us a little more about that, I guess. I'm just curious. So how is it that, like, what are you going to change, or what flowers do you grow for a wedding that you wouldn't grow for a farmer's market?
Well, farmer's market flowers need to be bright colored flowers, and people don't respond to something that's small. Oh. They want taller flowers that show up from, you know, across the street or down the street. Oh. That attracts people to your booth. Mm-hmm. And they expect certain types of flowers, mainly annuals, uh-huh, like zinnias and ageratum sunflowers, gladiolas, things like that. The smaller flowers just don't sell, and I couldn't get the money I needed for the little flowers that could be even more expensive to grow than people realize.
And then what are some of the little flowers that you are going to grow that you would grow for weddings? And they probably come into more of a color scheme, I suppose, too.
Yes, weddings are more pastel colors, mm-hmm, still. You know, pale pink, white, peach, light blue, no screaming zinnias, except in the middle of the summer sometimes. They'll want those. And also with the softer palette, then you have things like dahlias and lisianthus and heirloom chrysanthemums, things that are softer shape, more flowy. Vines are very popular, too, for weddings.
Hmm. Okay.
Some of the little flowers I'm growing are Scilla hispanica, Fritillaria milagris, and some little bulbs, Leucojum, and some of the smaller narcissus, the more specialty color ones, you know, that are red and yellow and pink and white, things like that for narcissus, and parrot tulips, and campanulas.
All right. Well, I'm sure we'll dig into that more as we get going. So I was going to ask about your very first gardening experience. I always like to start us off with, like, you know, were you a kid, an adult? How big was it? Where were you with? What'd you grow? Or who were you with? What'd you grow? Just tell us a little bit about how you got started.
Well, when I was a kid, my mother used to give us packets of vegetable seeds and we would plant them in the garden, and then I think that she did that so we would eat our vegetables. wanted to eat what we grew.
But that's important, and I think that's a great way to get kids started. And, like, you know, as I said, I was a teacher. My mom taught for 30-something years, and we just talked about that yesterday, about how it is important for kids to get that feel. And they do want to taste vegetables once they've grown them that they wouldn't maybe taste naturally. So I think that's a great answer.
Right. I used to go out and eat the green beans and the snap peas and the French peas right off of the plants.
No, did you grow up in Pennsylvania?
Go out and snack on them.
In Pennsylvania, too, where you're living now, or did you grow up somewhere in a different climate?
No, I grew up in Southern California.
Oh, okay. So that's quite a change.
Yes, and I've been in Pennsylvania for 24 years.
Wow. So then was your garden in California like a big garden or a little garden? Or?
It was a child? Well, I'm one of seven children. It was pretty big. I remember there was about 10 rows, but I can't really remember how long they were.
Okay.
So, yeah, it seemed like it was pretty big. We each had our favorites.
Mm-hmm. Now, the next question I always ask everybody is, what does organic gardening or earth-friendly gardening mean to you? Because everybody kind of has a different opinion.
Well, as a farmer, I believe that gardeners and farmers have a mission as to be stewards of the planet. Even if it's a small part of the planet, it's a stewardship, and I take that responsibility seriously. It makes a difference. You know, anybody who is working with the earth needs to take care of it. And
that's
my thought.
Okay, and then who or what inspired you to start using organic techniques?
Well, when I moved to Pennsylvania, I discovered a Rodale in Emmaus, and they have a lot of classes, public classes that are open to anybody who wants to take them. So I started taking classes there, and that's what got me started, really.
Okay. Can you tell us a little more about that at all, or share, like, maybe your favorite class or anything else about that at all?
Well, they have so many. One of the ones that I learned a lot from was the class they had about soil.
Oh,
and okay. Then they did have some flower classes. But soil and composting were the two I think I got the most from, because I didn't know anything about, you know, soil structure or you know, micronutrients or anything like that.
Cool.
So that was a really important class.
I like that. And then, so then that my next question is, how did you learn how to grow organically? Would that be your answer, or did you have something else to add? Or?
Well, I read a lot of books.
Uh-huh. Okay.
I read, from flower farming to, I have Organic Gardening Magazine, mm-hmm. and just whatever I could get my hands on.
Yep.
That's
and
how
pretty
I learned.
Soon you'll be listening to more and more podcasts, I bet.
Right.
And I like that you were talking about, in our pre-interview, we were talking about the Slow Farming, Slow Flower podcast, right? That Deborah Prinzing does?
Yes, I listened to that. That's a good, I really enjoyed that podcast.
Okay, so let's talk about your garden that you have. So I'm going to ask tell us about something that grew well this year, but quickly just give it like an idea, like how big is it? And you said it's mostly flowers, right? Did you say your husband grew a few vegetables, but we're going to talk about flowers.
Right. Now my I have 3 acres.
3 acres.
And 2 heated greenhouses and 2 cold frames or high tunnels. And the rest is field. So in the fields, I grow annuals, perennials, bulbs, and vines. Mm-hmm. And my husband grows tomatoes and green beans and peas, but it's in raised beds. The vegetables are in raised beds close to the house, and I really don't have much to do with them.
Uh-huh. Okay, and so tell us about something that grew really well this year. Like, was there one of your flowers that was spectacular, or something that you liked that was easy to grow? Or,
well, this past season I grew Tweedia, which is a little South American vining flower that's a true blue, and it grows. I have to grow it inside because it doesn't like cooler weather. But I did really well with this flower. It's one of the true blue flowers that you can grow, and florists loved it. Yeah, I sold almost every single stem I grew. So okay. I was really happy about that.
Okay. And then is there something you would do different next year?
Yes. Well, what I'm doing is I'm planting a lot more perennials. I planted some in the fall, and I'll be planting more in the spring because they seem to be the flowers that florists want. So I'm going through this transition, and I need more flowers that are dainty. I think that's the best way to put it, because when you're making a floral arrangements, if you have big dahlias and big roses and, you know, big phlox, you need something else to finish off the arrangement. So it's not just a bunch of big blobs of flowers. So these little flowers, like little campanulas and smaller blooming clematis and things like fall anemones, things like that, are really important to floral design.
Neat. I like the way you talked about putting all those different bouquet ideas together and sharing with our audience, you know, growing perennials. So now I have a couple questions about that.
Okay.
Quickly, I'm just going to make sure everybody knows. So perennials are flowers that come back every year, and annuals are ones that you have to plant. They die after a season. So perennials, where do you get your perennials? Do you buy them or grow them from seed or get them from a neighbor, or where do you, or just spreading some out, or?
Well, there are some perennials that I grow from seed, but most of the time I buy them in plug trays from a few different wholesale places.
Okay. Go ahead, keep going.
Yeah, I do try to buy as many of the natives as I can because they're, number one, they're easier to grow if you buy something that's native to your location.
Absolutely.
And, you know, number two, that way you know it's not going to be invasive.
Right. And those are both such important points. And that's another thing I love about perennials is that, one, you can usually find them from someone local to share with you. So you know that it's come up and they expand. And so you're like, I think every couple of years or so you need to go in and spread them apart and move them, which is nice because you're getting more and more back every year. And I love the way they just come up on their own.
Right. It's nice. And a lot of them bloom earlier in the spring than you can get annuals. So it's a good way to get flowers earlier for selling to florists or even for farmers market. It's one way that you can have flowers early in April or early in May, whereas annuals usually don't start until here, mid-June to July. So you need something to fill in that time frame.
Right. That's a good point, too. So do you want to talk anything about how you got interested in growing flowers or started a flower business for people who might be wondering and thinking they're already overwhelmed hearing all of the flowers that you've talked about and think, like, did you start big or start small, or how'd you get started?
I did start small. How I really got started was that I moved into a little house in Pennsylvania, and I was working with a catering company, and my garden didn't have any flowers. So I asked somebody what grows well in the shade. So the first thing I actually ever grew, the first flowers I actually ever grew here were impatiens.
Oh, uh-huh.
I was so thrilled. I'm like, oh, look, I have flowers. So, and I grew herbs for my catering business.
Oh.
For a long time, that's how I started. It is actually with herbs. Then I decided that I liked the flowers better, so I don't grow very many herbs anymore. I grow flowers.
Huh, and you don't, like, mix herbs into your bouquet? Because, like, you know, to me,
I
mean, I guess chives might not be that good at a wedding, but I always think those big purple chives blooms are beautiful, and the sage blooms, and even oregano has pretty purple flowers.
And I do use those. I just don't grow them in the quantity that I used to.
So,
I have herbal bouquets that I use, but I have a friend who lives around the corner from me, and she's an herbalist, so I can get organic herbs from her.
Excellent. Maybe I could interview her someday.
You
could introduce me.
I'm sure she would like to be interviewed.
Okay, so how about something that didn't work so well this season?
Well, this past season was perfect. Mm-hmm. I have to say, there wasn't anything that didn't do well. I do have clay soil, so I have to be careful with things that, like, a dry. I don't really grow salvias because my soil's too wet. Even in a dry year, my soil's too wet. And I plant everything on raised beds for that reason, because I have an underground stream on my property, and my soil stays wet, so I have to plant on raised beds. But things like salvia and plants that like drier soil, I don't bother with anymore because they just tend to rot. So, but this past season, everything that I grew really well.
I think those are just great answers, and you're sharing lots of value for our listeners. Plus, encouragement that there are going to be great seasons where things work good. And also, you know, you're sharing a little bit about other years and things that you've learned. So that's the perfect answer. Okay, how about something that you find is easy to grow and is generally successful pretty much every time you plant it? Got anything like that?
Successful every time I plant it. Well, it's not dahlias. Dahlias are so weather dependent that if it rains a lot in the summer before last was terrible.
Oh.
All the dahlias rotted because it just kept raining and raining and raining. And then last summer they did really well. Something that always does well for me, but it's because I have a greenhouse, are lilies, and I don't even grow them in the ground anymore. I grow them in crates, in bulb crates, with bagged soil. So I use a soil mix that's perlite and peat moss and some micronutrients in it, but I don't use, you know, regular soil. And
now, how'd you get to that point, like growing in a crate in a bag with soil? Like, why'd you decide to do that with lilies, or why'd you even come up with that solution?
Well, for people who grow for florists, if you plant lilies in the ground outside, they're very susceptible to botrytis.
Oh.
So when they get rained on, they get botrytis. So that's why I decided to grow them in the greenhouse. And the reason I decided to grow them in crates is a member of the Association of Specialty Cut Flower Growers said that's how most growers grow them. Most professional flower farmers grow lilies inside in crates because the bulbs can be timed. They come to me frozen.
Really?
And I order bulbs. And
I didn't know you could freeze bulbs. They freeze them.
Lilies, yes. Not all bulbs can be frozen.
Uh-huh. Sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt. So they come to you frozen and then?
They come to me frozen, and every 3 weeks I get a new shipment and I plant them. And so they're spread out throughout the season, starting at Easter and ending at Thanksgiving.
Wow. Mm-hmm. All right.
If
well,
I planted them outside, they would all bloom at once or close to all at once.
Uh-huh. Oh, right. Well, that's so much information just right there on that one question.
Yeah.
Okay, how about something you'd steer new gardeners away from that you find is typically challenging to grow in your climate?
Roses.
Roses?
Roses. That should have been my answer. I forgot that I planted roses a few years ago, and every single one of them died.
Mm-hmm. And
it was horrible. I think they came in with a rose virus, and they're very susceptible to a virus, which comes in on, or is carried by a mite. Anyway, so they got this virus and they all died. It was heartbreaking.
Aww.
So I pulled them all out and planted lilacs. Lilacs do well here, so.
Oh, lilacs are so smelly and wonderful and just,
yes,
aren't they the
are.
Best? I love lilacs. Our town is in the spring that lilac bushes bloom and just the whole town smells like lilacs and it's just so nice.
It's so yummy.
Okay, but you must grow roses for weddings, so you must have figured some successful techniques out. Right?
Actually, for a long time, since those roses died, I didn't start any more roses. I just gave up on roses until last year when I decided I was going to try some David Austin's. So I ordered David Austin roses, and I planted them in raised beds, which I prepared really well, mm-hmm. and planted them, and they didn't get black spot or powdery mildew or anything, but they were attacked by Japanese beetles, and I did not sell one stem.
Oh.
I mean, roses are something that you more or less have to specialize in. So this year what I'm going to do is put insect netting on them.
Oh, okay. Well, see, that's so much information people are going to, you know, take value in and think, boy, you know, maybe somebody's like, I'm going to grow roses for weddings. And then they're going to, you know, hear this and be like, oh, I better research that and make sure that. Right. And that's part of what I thought about starting this podcast and talking to different people is that, you know, they say you learn the most from, you know, talking to your neighbors. And so hopefully by the time we're up to episode like 100 or 300 or something, we'll have episodes from all around the country and people will be really getting to hear about their area. So, So thanks for sharing that.
Climate is extremely important. What grows well here doesn't necessarily grow well
Absolutely.
In the Pacific Northwest. I mean, Portland, there's a lot of roses grown in Portland. There's a lot of roses grown in California, and there's a lot of roses grown in Texas. And the reason for that is because they have dry summers. Portland has a lot of rain, but that's in the winter, so they can grow roses in the spring and in the summer.
And you mean Portland, Oregon, or Portland, Maine?
Yep, Portland, Oregon.
Right. Okay.
So here it's humid, so the roses get fungal diseases.
Oh. You are just full of knowledge. Okay, how about a favorite tool that you like to use? Like, if you had to move and could only take one tool with you, what's your go-to tool that you couldn't live without?
My husband.
I like that.
Actually, it's not. my wheel hoe. I would have to answer my wheel hoe.
What's a wheel hoe?
It's a hoe with a wheel on it. It's called a low wheel hoe. Do you know what? It's got handles.
Like two handles?
Two handles.
I think I know.
And a wheel and
so what do you use it for? Planting or digging up weeds or?
No, for weeding.
Okay.
For weeding. And you can weed so much faster with the wheel hoe than you can with a hula hoe or any other kind of hoe. If you do it at the right time before the weeds are big, then you can just walk down the row and gone.
Nice.
You know,
no, I
faster than doing it by hand.
Did I ask you how long are your rows?
The shortest rows are 50 feet, the longest is 200.
50 feet to 200. Wow. Okay. How about a favorite internet resource?
For crop planning, I like Ag Squared.
Ag Square?
AG Squared.
Okay. How about a favorite reading material or a book, a magazine, a blog, a website, something that you liked?
Well, there are a few.
Okay.
One of my favorite books, and it's quite accessible for somebody who doesn't actually know a lot about farming. It's called The Flower Farmer by Lynn Baczynski. Mm-hmm. And
that's what got me started.
It's my favorite. It's actually my favorite. I have some other books which are more technical.
Mm-hmm.
And anybody who actually wants to be a flower farmer, I encourage to join the Association of Specialty Cut Flower Growers. That's where I learned most of what I know. They have a bulletin board. They have all kinds of resources for beginner growers, and it's invaluable.
Mm-hmm. And I'll link those up in the show notes so people can link directly to that. And somebody else I had on gave us that link too. It gave me that resource too. Yeah. But I like some of the information you've given us from them. So
right. Yeah, it's nothing beats getting information from other growers.
Right.
And that's what the ASCFG has to offer.
Okay, so here's your chance to tell us about, you know, your business. Any advice for our listeners on how to get started, or anything you want to tell us about, you know, your successes or challenges that you've had that have been extra tough that you would warn people about, or just tell us anything that you want to share about your business.
I would say, and this is what I've told anybody who asks me, growing flowers is the easy part.
Okay.
Selling them is more difficult. If you can't sell them, then you don't have a business. What you have is a hobby.
So what would you suggest for somebody that wanted to get started selling flowers that's going to make them help them be successful?
First, you have to know what market, who you want to sell to.
Excellent.
Because that determines what you'll grow.
Okay.
As I said earlier, if you're selling at farmers markets, there are certain flowers that people expect to see at farmers markets.
Okay.
You know, zinnias and sunflowers and gomphrena and bright, colorful flowers, some tall flowers that make an impact and things. You can grow things that people think are unusual. But for florists, they're not.
And, you know, that was going to be my next question I was going to ask you, because I've heard you mention florists a few times. So if you're going to grow for weddings, are you going to deal with the individual brides themselves and the wedding party? Or are you just going to sell to florists who then sell to the...
Well, I do both.
Okay.
So if you're going to deal with brides... First of all, you need to learn about the wedding, the business part of the wedding, and not just how to grow the flowers.
Okay.
So, you know, do some research on marketing and how to make an estimate and what prices you need to get, and make sure you know what the florists around you are charging for weddings, because you don't want to make enemies of florists by underselling them. And also,
ooh, that's a good point.
Mm-hmm. Especially if you're going to sell flowers to these same florists. They're not going to take very kindly to you if you're undercutting them on weddings.
So then do you have like a wholesale price for the florist and then a retail price that you charge the wedding party when you make your prices? Or you kind of, how do you come up with that?
When I do a wedding, how I price it is I sell the flowers to myself. So it's a wholesale price for the flowers, and then I mark it up for the wedding client.
Okay. And then, like, if you're growing for a wedding, like, is there like they get different packages? Like, there's the bride's bouquet, and then there's bouquets for their what do they call it? The bridesmaids, and then on the table is separate, or like, how does somebody order flowers for a wedding?
So I would send them a form that asks what they want as far as flowers.
Oh, cool. So did you make your form, or did you get it from somewhere?
From
trial and error, you've kind of come up with it?
Well, I read what other people had,
and then
I added and subtracted, you know.
Because I imagine, I worked in the printing industry for a long time, and I imagine there's quite a bit that's similar. Like, after a while of working at the printing industry, there was nothing I would print without a signed proof that, yes, this is what I want, this is how many I want, this is what I'm going to pay for it, and yes, we've agreed to, and they check off the boxes and sign their name before we send anything to press. And I'll
bet... The contract?
Flowering, kind of, you know, it wasn't that But, you know, just because once orders start coming back and they're, you know, saying this didn't come out the way I thought it was going to be, or, you know, this didn't look right, I just kind of learned what my form needed to say and what they, because you'd be surprised that, like, some people would be like, you spelled my name wrong. And you're like, well, you know, you looked at it.
you proved it
right. So, you know, uh-huh. At some point you have to be able to come out in writing and say, okay, you checked all your typos, you've had somebody else's eyes go over this. So I would imagine weddings could be kind of like that too, that you would want to make sure people, you know, the expectation is clear.
You do want to make sure the expectation is clear. And I have contracts.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Sign contracts for every wedding.
Okay.
And I've learned that, you know, if it's not on the contract, something's going to happen.
So, what other things would you tell? What other easy things are there? Like you said, the selling's the hard part, but how about sharing some easy things to maybe encourage people or inspire them that, you know, this might be something they want to do if they've been thinking about it, something that might make them think, oh yeah, I could do that.
I would say start with annuals the first season.
Okay.
And the easier ones to grow. Zinnias are really easy. Marigolds are easy. Grand Frina is very easy. Ageratum. Most annuals are fairly easy.
Okay. Okay. Anything else you want to share? We're right at our time, so
we're right at our time.
Yeah.
Join the Association of Specialty Cut Flower Growers if you're interested at all, because it will pay for itself many, many times over with all the help you get from that association. Read a lot of books before you start. Talk to people who are flower farmers, and visit farms if you can.
So do you have an inspirational tip or quote to help motivate our listeners to reach into the dirt?
Yes, I do. It's Luther Burbank. Flowers always make people better, happier, and more helpful. They are sunshine, food, and medicine for the soul.
Oh, I like that a lot. And it's true. I almost always, when the, what are they called? The yellow daffodils are in the store. And I always try to buy a bunch of those bouquets. And when they're closed and you give them to someone and say, here, put these in water, and they bloom in the morning. It's just the best feeling. And just flowers are, I think there's going to be a boom in flowers in America. Like, if we could get some organic flowers. I always think, like, you know, in New York City, there's all those, flower, you know, there's flowers on every corner. You know, people don't realize that, but when, I guess because I grew up on Long Island outside of New York City, just I always remember seeing, and I want to see all those bouquets be organic flower bouquets. You know,
they're not just organic flower bouquets, American grown flower bouquets.
Ooh, what a great way to leave off our
80%
show today.
80% of the flowers we have in the United States come from South America.
Oh, really?
Yep.
I didn't realize that.
And most of the time, those flowers are covered with pesticides. Something people don't realize is even if they're organically grown, most of the time they're not organic by the time they get to the grocery store.
Why is that?
Because they are inspected before they can be allowed to be distributed. And if there's even one bug found on them, everything has to be fumigated before they can be let out of the truck.
Oh, my goodness. No, I'll bet most people have no idea. I had no idea.
Yeah, so even things like Veriflora flowers are not necessarily organic.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Plus, when you also think about all the packaging that comes with those flowers.
Yes, absolutely. And I think a rise in organic flowers, people would buy more flowers. Because ultimately, I always think the cost of organics has to be less expensive than the cost of pesticides. I know there's something in transportation, but I ultimately think that when push comes to shove in the long run, it's people are going to find that this is the economic way to go.
I think it's more economical to grow them organically.
Yeah.
It, maybe the labor is a little bit more, but as far as inputs go, I think that it's more economical to grow them organically.
Yep.
Because I hardly use any insecticides at all, not even organic insecticides. Mm-hmm.
I know. It common sense says it's got to be the cost effective way. So, okay. Thank you, Kate, so much for being such a wonderful guest, for sharing so much valuable information. I know people are going to love this interview. It's one of the best ones I've done. And I wish you the best of luck. Do you want to tell people how to connect with you if they have any questions, or they want to see your website, or they want you to do their wedding?
They can email me.
Okay. Go ahead and share your email address.
Okay. Kate, K-A-T-E, at lilies, L-I-L-I-E-S, and A-N-D, lavender, LAVENDER.com.
Excellent. Kate, have a great day. Thanks so much for being on the show.
Thank you. It was really nice speaking to you, and I hope you have a good day, too.
No matter where you garden, a few key practices can help prevent problems. Plants, like people, get sick when they are under stress, and I found that if any part of my garden suffers from prolonged stress, insects and disease will move in shortly thereafter. So be sure to water, weed, and check for bugs and diseases regularly. Remove sickly plants at once and dispose of them in the burn pile or trash, since disease spores don't always die in the compost pile. By spotting insects early, you can take swift measures before the problem gets out of hand. This is just a great piece of advice from Aaron Bazankian's Floret Farms Cut Flower Garden, Grow, Harvest, and Arrange Stunning Seasonal Blooms. If you haven't read this book, you definitely want to check it out if you're doing any kind of gardening, but especially if you're doing flower gardening. And you can get this book or any book at Amazon by going to theorganicgardenerpodcast.com, click on the recommended books page, and there's a link there that will sponsor or help support the Organic Gardener Podcast while getting you a great book. If you know somebody who would benefit from the Organic Gardener Podcast, we would just love it if you would share it with a friend. Thanks again for listening, and remember to grow.